Bones of the only comic book podcast that is always on to go. I'm one of your hosts, Chance.
It's a comics and nerd culture podcast, and I'm your other host, Cameron.
Hey,
hello.
Cameron.
Hi. Hello. We're back.
Did you want to talk about why we weren't here last week, or are you just good?
I think I'm just good.
Okay.
It's had a really, really bad last week. Everything's, as okay as it can be. I just don't want to go into a whole lot of details, but it's fine.
Okay, good. I just didn't know how much you wanted to give, but yes, Cameron had a very bad day on Sunday when we normally record, and we just couldn't.
But now we can. It was a long week, a hard week, but the week is over, and it's been a good couple of days.
Yeah, and you're 6'7" now.
I am very 6'7". Chance and I and our friends had a long text conversation about what 6'7" could possibly mean. I told them at the beginning, I said, it doesn't mean anything.
That's not what you said. You said no one knows what it means, not even the kids who use it.
Which means it doesn't mean anything. So maybe I was vague in my explanation. But as I always say to anybody who asks, I say, it doesn't mean anything. And then I put my phone down because I was doing something relatively important. I don't even remember, so it's not that important. But then I come back to like 30 messages of my friends being like, but what does it mean? And they're just talking about it. And it was so 6'7", the whole conversation.
Yeah, that's a thing. I love new slang.
Because
it's kind of a meme, right?
Probably. But here's the thing, because I'm in a middle school, so I see this a lot. You have a child in third grade. I have a child in fourth grade and one in first grade. And I don't want to just like be one of those old people, but like I worry for this generation of children.
Why?
But not in the normal way. I worry because it seems largely that they're incapable of being funny, like genuinely funny, because the entire meme brain rot culture has just seeped its way into their minds and like literally done what the name suggests to the point where they're not expressing original thoughts. They're not being even like situationally funny. They're not like riffing on a moment and like being funny. They're just repeating, oh, skibbity 6'7". And I hear it constantly. Mm-hmm. But rather than like any sort of social awareness, picking up on what anybody else is saying and like feeding off of it, not for every child, but for a lot, it's just like it's just bled the humor out of everyone. And I think also probably like YouTubers, because I see this with my own son a lot, where he watches a few specific YouTubers, and of course as they're like playing a game, like they're playing like a Minecraft or whatever, and they're going to be talking to the audience. Mm-hmm. And so my son feels the need when he does anything to like narrate it and just like make noise and thinks that he's like just being really funny.
Oh really? I haven't seen that yet.
But he's, maybe it's just a him thing, but we talk to him as like, you don't need to be like them in this way. Like, you can enjoy what they're doing, but you don't need to just fill the silence.
Hmm. That's so interesting. Because, yeah, that was not one that's happened. I do think that internet culture has kind of, like, permeated all of this. Like, I don't think, like, any of the, like, the skibbities, the 6'7s, they're even bringing back old ones like clankers and sweats.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that any of it is, like, as organic as the slang that developed when we were kids, because like there's an awareness that we never had, and I'm pretty sure most of Gen Z never had, that our slang was being discussed online. There's like,
yeah, because especially like ours, there was no online for our slang to be discussed.
Yeah, and even like, I mean, even YouTube didn't really become a thing until 2007. I mean, it like literally didn't become a thing until 2007. I'm not like, oh, it was like around that time that people thought, no, it wasn't a thing.
Yeah, it didn't exist.
So, like, the most we had was, like, Flash videos, like Hamster Dance.
Badger Mushroom.
Badgers, Mushrooms, yeah. That's, like, the best we had for all of that. Hodor.
I mean, that was later, because, I mean, that was Game of Thrones.
Oh, maybe I don't mean Hodor. What was the dragon with the hump in his back?
Trogdor,
thank you.
Different, very different things.
Yeah, I was like, no, I'm talking...
Homestar, like a Homestar Runner. Like,
yeah,
those
I was talking
web
like...
web series.
But no one was talking about anything. Like, all of that was nonsense. But they're growing up seeing people talk online about everything. So I don't even know that like the slang is developing organically.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's kind of got to be more ridiculous because in some ways they're aware that it's content.
Uh-huh. And yeah, just in terms of content, like the idea of like shocking, like being shocking. And so it's just like a constant deluge of things just to try to keep up interest, keep up clicks and views. Whatever Mr. Beast is up to, Stanford prison experiment sort of stuff.
Yeah. 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 And it is, we were talking a lot about, I have a lot of teachers in my Sunday school class. And we were talking a lot about like kids and behaviors right now. And when, at one point when like the third or fourth teacher had started talking about it, I was like, it sounds like they all are living life like they're on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a discussion about how that really has like affected the way things go.
Yeah. But that's not what we're here to talk about. we're not a, what are the problems plaguing America's youth podcast?
But we could be.
I mean, we could be.
Let me be your plaguing the youth guy.
I like to think that we're the solution.
I like to think we're the solution.
Because I think the solution is connection. The solution is storytelling. The solution is men in tights beating each other to a pulp. You know, it's comic books, baby.
I love all these things. I love them all.
It could also be wrestling if that's more your thing. Or well, it could be both things. Yeah, it could be both things could be your thing.
Or just a quick programming note. We're gonna kind of do the two main segments twice instead of like any kind of edited format. So we'll do best books from last week. We'll do them, and then we'll do book blurbs from last week, and then we'll go right into best books from this week, and we'll do book blurbs again, and then we're gonna just do one more things.
And it's gonna be great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gonna be real fun. And then we'll be back to B segments and everything normal next week. As long as, you know, we don't have another very, very bad day.
Hopefully you don't.
Yeah.
I feel like I've done mine.
Your bad day.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I have 6 and then 5. What do you got?
I've got 4 and then 6.
Okay.
And my best book, it'll be fairly short.
Okay.
I think in my discussion of it this first go round.
Okay. So but it's me first this week, right?
Uh-huh. You are first.
All right. So I'll have to double up at some point, but that's okay. I had a lot of pretty good books last week. It's weird because I had a lot of good books last week. But the one I decided to go with was kind of the most fun, promising start. And it was kind of a surprise to me. I'm going with All New Spider-Gwen Go Spider number 1.
Oh.
By I know it's Stephanie Phillips is the writer. Let me find that title page. Stephanie Phillips is the writer, and Paolo Villani, sure, is the artist. I was kind of jonesing for a spider book, and I saw this number 1. I didn't even know it was coming out, so I thought I'd give it a try. I actually follow Stephanie Phillips on social media. She's pretty cool, like as a person, like as a human being. So I saw there was a spider book number 1, grabbed it. It's kind of got the problems I've been having with a lot of number 1s lately of like, even though it's number 1, putting you like into the middle of the story. Mm-hmm. But I think mostly that's okay. It gets you there. It's just slow. I guess she was depowered for a while and got her powers from a symbiote. But now that kind of storyline is over, and they've kind of brought her back to square one of like trying to set up a new life in this new dimension. Cause she's now like solidly 616, her and her father. So she, what
is it? 616.
Yeah. The mark of the beast. One of them anyway.
Two-thirds of the beast.
What do you mean?
6 and then a 1 and then a 6.
Well, so, yes. The Mark of the Beast is actually two different numbers, depending on what manuscript you look. Sometimes it's 666 and sometimes it's 616.
What? That's crazy.
Greek-based manuscripts tend to go 666, and Hebrew-based manuscripts tend to go 616, because in Gematria there is a difference between Nero Kaiser and Neron Kaiser, which were the two, which was the language difference between the two.
Obviously.
So
in you don't Hebrew have to tell me the difference between Nero Kaiser and Neron Kaiser, Chance.
Well, it just it comes out to a different total in Gematria, which the Mark of the Beast is just the name of Nero written in Gematria.
Mm.
Not I mean, Martin.
I already knew that.
Oh, good.
Obviously.
Not modern, like basically astrology Gematria. We're talking like ancient Gematria, but it's this whole thing. It was a coded message. But yeah, so
apparently really coded.
616 is one of the two marks of the beast.
And also one of the Earths of Marvel Comics.
It's true, but it was actually named that because of the Mark of the Beast thing. They kind of chose it tongue in cheek. Anyway, sorry. This is two of my interests coming together.
You love it when that happens.
So yeah, she's got her powers. Like she's in her city. She's got her dad. I really like her costume. Give you a show of that.
Oh yeah,
it's pretty cool. Asher knows her as the pink spider person, and I'm like, she's not really pink. I don't know what you're talking about. But I guess there's Disney Plus show where she's pink. Spider-Man is like blue, and Miles is yellow or something.
Well, I know there's like the Spidey and His Amazing Friends TV show, which is like a kids show.
Mm-hmm,
but I feel like it's like the traditional suits, and she's like the white and black.
Well, no, but their webs are different colors.
Oh yes, their webs are different colors. Yes.
Yeah, and like their like powers have different colors or something. So he thinks of her as the pink one. So I guess having all of this pink kind of works. And I'm a sucker for putting a hoodie over a traditional superhero costume. I just think it's cool. But she's fighting some guy, and this is like one of those things where I kind of wish they were explaining a little bit better. His name is Tarantula, and she's kind of like flirting with him, but he's also got kind of a temper. So she's like, she calls it a situationship throughout the whole book, which I almost got annoyed by, and then I was like, grow up, old man.
Yeah, stop talking about what's wrong with the kids these days.
Yeah, exactly. And there is like a guy who is really on hard times. He's trying to do the right thing, and he keeps like restraining himself from something. And then at the end, he like kind of blows up into liquid. So I was thinking maybe Hydro Man. I'm not sure. But then Gwen reveals that she only needs one thing. She needs her band back. So she puts out an ad that she wants to form a band. And one of the new spider people that I'm less familiar with, but does have a very cool costume, Silk. Have you seen this girl?
I don't know.
She has a cool costume. I'm less familiar with her. I know she's kind of mystical Spider-Man or Spider-Girl, but I haven't really looked all that much into her. She comes.
Oh, okay. And she's, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. She's like desperate. She's like, I really want to be on your band. And Gwen's like, you don't know how to play an instrument or anything. And she's like, oh, I stayed up all night. Like, I guess she's got some kind of like superpowers or something. And she's like, I've stayed up all night and watching YouTube videos. Now I know how to play the bass. So I guess
as like a bass player, it's not that hard.
She's got some kind of super learning or something.
We're not that impressed. Cindy. Was it Cindy?
Cindy her name?
What I just looked up, I think it is actually. Yes, Cindy Moon.
Oh, yeah, Cindy, yeah.
We're not that impressed, Cindy. It's just the bass. It's not that hard.
She's like
Victor Wooten.
So, yeah, not everyone can be Wooten. But so I guess this Silk just really wants to hang out with Gwen. I don't know what their relationship is like, but I'm excited to get to explore it. And then there's like some hot guy, I don't know, but he shows up for the audition. So he's going to play lead. Gwen's going to drum, and Cindy's going to play the bass, and their first practice goes really well. She's talking to her dad, but her dad's like, hey, there was a bad murder today.
Murder's up 8%.
Like, I don't want you to
get murdered.
Investigate it. He's very protective. He's basically saying, like, you've gone through a lot. You've, like, lost your powers, got a symbiote, got him back. Like, I just don't want you a part of this. But then it cuts to the guy who's still in the practice space playing the guitar, and then he explodes into a liquid. So I'm guessing they're just getting killed.
Uh-huh. Seems bad.
Yeah, and then this thing is there, which might be a symbiote. I'm not sure.
It's sort of the tongue makes me think symbiote.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a symbiote. It's a little hard to tell what's going on in this book sometimes, because, like, there's them exploding. But the art is beautiful. Like, this may be one of the first books I've ever picked that I picked just because the art was gorgeous. Like, this jamming out picture of them. Or, wrong
way. Oh, yeah. I like that.
Like, I just think it's really, really quite neat. The art is gorgeous. Like, the art changes based on, like, what's going on in the scene quite a bit. You've got, like, really clean, character work. That's like, oh, yeah, that's what you'd expect. And then when things go kind of wild, you have, like, really abstract kind of. But I think it's a fun story. It's a fun place to set up where Spider-Gwen is and her going forward. It really captures, like, cool alt-girl vibes, which if you follow Stephanie Phillips, like, it kind of makes sense. She may not be. I don't know how cool she is, but she's definitely, like, kind of an alt girl. If she had told me she grew up as a goth or an emo or something in our day, which I think she's around our age, I just wouldn't be surprised. And it's going to be her trying to find this murderer. And it's just really gorgeous art. So yeah, all new Spider-Gwen, Ghost Spider number one. You got to be my best book last week. I was most excited to read issue 2 of this one. That's how I picked, because I had a lot of good books.
That's important. Okay. Well, my best book from last week, I don't think is going to be too much of a surprise, because it's issue 10, and I think it's been my best book
most times.
Like, at least 4 other times, if not more. But I don't want to get, like, too into it, because I think we're, like, in the end game now. And, like, big things have happened. Like, the end of issue number 9 was, like, pretty shifting. And I think a lot of the things that happened story-wise really are obviously coming into play here in issue 10. But there's, like, 2 issues left in the run of Batman and Robin year 1. Oh, it came with this variant cover because they were out of the regulars, but I do like it. I don't like it $1 more, but I do like it. So this is by Mark Waid and Chris Samnee, and they are still just absolutely killing it. Here's the actual cover.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty creepy. Yeah, it's good.
It's the faces.
So I don't know how much I want to get into it. But I think there's some things that are really, I can talk around some of the big story beats that make it interesting. I feel like this issue, it does a really good, it shows, like, a good example of, a little bit of horror, a little bit of just, like, crime thriller. We have action from Batman and Robin doing their thing. I think Chris Samnee is still just, like, top of his game. He's doing some amazing work in terms of the art in the book. Like, it's all very expressive, very interesting, and just super cool. And I think that Wade's writing can just be so heavy and so serious, and then just flip a switch with something that just, like, makes you crack a smile, but in, like, this way that's, like, winking at the lore, poking fun at the, you know, we have, like, a very long history of Batman, so just, like, poking fun at that. Like, there's a moment, like, the, like, Commissioner Gordon is shining the bat signal, and they're, like, running and the car's going, and he's like, couldn't we just get, like, Robin's like, couldn't we just get, like, a bat phone? And he could call us, and then Batman's just like, stop.
It's too traceable, Robin.
It's very funny. Or, like, they get to the thing, and the bat signal is shining, and Robin's, like, making a shadow puppet of an R in the bat signal so that he's like right there. And Commissioner Gordon's like, you got to be careful. This thing gets really hot. And it's just really interesting. And I think we just see the scope of how bad things have gotten in Gotham City as a result of all the things that the General has done, just what Clayface and Two-Face are up to, kind of everybody's making their moves. And just this really like, it's almost like this invasion of the body snatchers kind of way that I just think is really fun. So, I mean, it's already issue 10. If you haven't read any of these yet, probably the easiest thing to do will be to wait for the trade of all of these collected together to come out. But I mean, I would highly, highly recommend, like, don't sleep on this when that comes out. If you've slept on it up to this point, because I just think, yeah, it's gorgeous to look at. The story is just top notch. I think it's a, like I said it before, it's like a definitive take on the beginning of Batman and Robin's like working relationship. And I love it. And it ends just in a way where it's like, we see that the bad guys are making moves beyond just towards Batman. Like they're striking out at Bruce Wayne even. And just things go. I don't know if they even know that he is, but like things happen in like the true way to stop Batman is to take down Bruce Wayne. And they do it in a very interesting way. So yeah, I actually think it's top tier. It's like consistently like the best book month over month. And I think one of the best of the big two books that's being published right now is Batman and Robin Year One.
Love it.
Dink.
All right. That means you've got three more, and I've got one, two, three, four, five. Do we have one in common?
I don't believe so.
You didn't read number two of this?
No. What is it? It came out? I didn't know it came out.
Yeah, Ghost Pepper number two was last week. Okay.
I didn't read it because I didn't see it.
So I'll do two, you do one, I do two, you do one, and I'll do my last one.
Well, I mean, I've got three.
Yeah.
So 2-1, 2-1, 1-1.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Checked out.
I checked out Rick Remender's Escape.
Oh, we do have one that's the same then.
Oh, okay. Okay, you take this one then.
Okay, you want me to take it right now?
Yeah, take it.
Okay, so Rick Remender's Escape with art by Daniel Acuna. Mm-hmm. It's just a war. How did my cover get torn? I think my baby got a hold of this issue.
My cover like really weirdly warped.
I don't know. That's weird. That's really weird. I think mine was a baby. But it's like it's a war story, but rather than people, it's like dogs and cats versus bats. And overall, I bought it and I was like, oh, this seems really cool. This seems like it'll be right up my alley. Could have be a contender. And I felt like it just was very straightforward. It didn't really do anything with the format other than making them dogs and cats and bats, which is fine. Maybe it will turn into more, but it just felt kind of like a grim and gritty war story, sort of a World War II-ish vibes.
Yeah, it's definitely like World War II where bats are Nazis.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Just for my two cents real quick, I kind of get what they're going for, really focusing on this squad that we're going to be kind of like following out, because it's going to be kind of an escape story, it seems like.
I mean, as the title would suggest.
Yeah, like they're trying to escape like basically the center of Nazi Germany after they've just bombed the crap out of it. And I liked that. And I liked how it showed the kind of conflict of like we're really mad at you because you killed our people, but you're really mad at us because we killed your people, and almost how ridiculous that was. It's like, oh, okay. It doesn't do that until like the last third, but I think the last third is like, you killed them, and the other people are like, you killed them. It's like, we hate you for that. And it's like, well, this is nonsense. Okay,
this is a cycle. It's almost like war is a cycle or something.
That doesn't really make any sense.
And the art was great.
Yeah, the art was really good. I think occasionally it was a little hard to tell what was going on, and the dogs looked like gorillas, but...
I think it's because it's just dogs. I'm like, have I met this person? But I mean, now there's just the one, so I don't have to worry about it too much.
So, Escape. It was good.
I picked it up on a whim because two of my books weren't there. They were out of Batman, Absolute Batman, and Space Quest, number 4. The final issue of Space Quest wasn't there.
Did you find him?
No. He said Batman would be coming in probably this week, getting some more. Then I don't know about Space Quest.
Okay. I will talk about Wolf Pepper number 2.
Yes, I will.
By Ludo Ladabi and Adriano Lucas. I was surprised that this wasn't my best book. And not that it's bad, but this is a setup issue. Like, legitimately, it's the bad guy, or maybe not the bad guy, I don't know. The guy who's fashioned himself a god, telling his side of the past, and then Ash telling his side of the past. Nothing really happens, except that Ash was part of a group that helped to fight the Cinder, and he claims he's the one who punched the Cinder to the moon. I'm kind of spoiling this for Cameron. I apologize.
That's okay. I kind of picked up on that he was maybe had something to do with the moon punging.
Yeah, he was like the guy. But something happened to him. We don't know what. He doesn't know what. And now everyone worships this other guy as the guy who did it. But that guy is now calling all of the people that used to fight with Ash, who I guess are just super powerful people who got bored and wandered off, like legitimately. That's what they did. And he's calling them all and being like, hey, we got to kill Ash, so you've got something to do.
Can't be bored anymore.
So we'll kind of see how that all goes. But it's very much a setup issue. It's like the backstory from two perspectives.
Mm-hmm. Which, like, it needed to happen.
Yeah, it needed to happen. We kind of need to get it out of the way. But, yeah, it's not...
Then we can get back to the super punching.
Yeah, then we can get back to the super punching. So, yeah, that's Ghost Pepper number 2. And then I'll do... You got 2 more?
Yes, 2 more. So do another one. I'll do 1. You do 2 more.
Okay.
Something like that.
Great book by Superman Unlimited by Dan Slott with art by...
Is it out Raphael Albuquerque?
No, last name is Meyer.
It was, though. He was doing the art.
Oh, he's credited on there, but he's not the main artist. Maybe they collabed. But yeah, Raphael Albuquerque.
What issue is it? Is it 3 or 4?
4. Here it is. By Lucas Meyer and Raphael Albuquerque. Okay. This was a fun issue, but it kind of only was fun. Superman saves a girl who's clad in kryptonite jewelry. She kisses him.
Oh no!
Like on the cheek, just to get the selfie. Then he helps take down a version of Man-Bat that's attacking Jimmy Olsen. But he's still weak from the kryptonite. So when that Man-Bat bites him, he turns into a Superman bat.
Well, that is.
Yeah, it's Cassie Kane, Black Canary, and Damian Wayne versus Superman as Man-Bat. But it turns out he's trying to... It just turned out he was trying to tell them how to beat him. He was trying to tell them how to beat him, and the secret was just for Jimmy to use his watch to overload his now, like, super-duper hearing. So that's how they end up beating him, and then Batman cures him. It was fun. It wasn't, like, mind-blowing or anything, but it was good.
It's interesting to have, like, a one-off like that and, like, a big story.
Well, I think that's what they're doing is, like, kryptonite is so common.
It's just, like, in this new status quo, who knows what could happen. Let's have some fun with it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's, like, the whole thing is, like, kryptonite is now so common that this girl just had random bits of it on her. So that causes problems for Superman when it really shouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Next one, and one I wanted to like more, and I think I will now that the setup is done. The same writer who does the just week by week acclaimed, and we're kind of being remiss for not reading it, Poison Ivy, which is apparently like the best book out right now. G. Willow Wilson is writing a new Marvel book, Black Cat number one. So I grabbed this as well by G. Willow Wilson and Gleb Milnikov.
Good old Gleb.
Good old Gleb Milnikov. This as well was a lot of fun. It was basically her getting hurt by the lizard, her going to the night nurse and explaining like things are getting worse on the streets. I don't know what's going on with Spider-Man right now. He shows up at one point, but like won't talk to her and just kind of looks at her menacingly and leaves. And she says like he hasn't talked to me since the Hellgate started.
Sounds menacing.
I guess Spider-Man's doing something called the Hellgate. But she's like, I guess if the friendly neighborhood spider is too distracted, I'm gonna have to be the friendly neighborhood black cat. So she's gonna fight crime, but she's already on the list for Tombstone and Sandman. So I'm kind of excited to see Black Cat versus Tombstone and Sandman fighting crime.
Two criminals.
Black Cat number one.
Okay, for me, this next one, The New Gods number 9 by Ram V. Evan Cagle only did a little bit of this one. Pi Par did most of the art. I thought it was good for the most part. I feel like it's just like throwing characters, new characters over and over again. And I'm just like, I don't know who any of these people are. And I don't know if it's like people that I should know who they are. If I'm like a new Genesis fan.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems like a mixture of those things where just it feels a bit like overcrowded. And now they're on Earth and like the Justice League is involved. And so it's just a lot. Beautiful though, but a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I don't know how much longer I will keep reading it, mostly because I can't always remember what happened or make sense of what's happening.
DC needs to do the Marvel thing that Marvel's been doing lately and put recaps in the front of their books.
It would really help, I think.
Yeah, even just a few like lines. I was also supposed to have Green Lantern number 26 this week, but I forgot that last month when I got Green Lantern, I accidentally bought a second copy of 24
instead of 25.
So I started reading 26 and I was like, this is not what was happening.
Missed a whole issue.
And then I went back and looked and I was like, So I do not have Green Lantern 24 or 26 like I should, but I do intend to keep up and go back to it. So more on that later.
So do you have one more?
Yes, I have one more. Justice League Red number one. It was fine. Red Arrow recruits Power Girl and Simon Baz, who are characters that I think, like, I desperately want them to have the spotlight. He says that the Justice League has inadvertently caused an apocalyptic level threat, and he knows how to stop it, but it's going to seem kind of weird. So he sends them to destroy a sentient robot about to take over a planet. They destroy it, but then they find out that it is just a giant harvesting robot, and that these people don't have a way to harvest their food now. And they're like, what's going on? We need to go confront Red Tornado. So they leave to confront Red Tornado, and then back on Earth, Black Adam is like, so Red Tornado is moving. Time for Black Adam to enter the fray. So I didn't love it, but I'm interested enough to see what's going on.
Nice.
And I'm mostly getting it because this is a killer team. I love this.
Uh-huh. I like that Power Girl's weird window is the Superman shape.
Yeah, because that's
instead of an oval.
Yeah.
It's more classic, but also more revealing.
Yep, that's true.
I don't know why they didn't make the change years ago, honestly. So my last one, and it was really good, was Absolute Flash number 6. Weirdly enough, the Flash isn't in this one. It's a backstory of the Rogues, who we tend to think of as the Rogues. But in this universe, they are all like ex-military, and they were part of a team that maybe did some things that they shouldn't have in, I believe, Syria. And so they were all possibly, you know, dishonorably discharged after that. But Wally's dad is going and recruiting them all to this program that's going to turn them into weapons. Project Olympus, which is where they're going to be getting how they, this is basically how they became the team that is currently hunting down.
Did I see a panel from this that was making its way around social media that Golden Glider lost her legs in the war and like Captain Cold and her like joined up so that they would get them back or something?
She did lose her legs. She's in a wheelchair, but I didn't see anything about her getting them back.
Well, like they gave her like new Golden Glider weapon legs.
Oh yeah.
Not that she got her originals back.
That's what it seems to be. They have those legs.
Okay.
Replaced for her. You saw that going around?
Yeah, it was just a panel. I think I follow a lot of like disability communities, and I think people are like, is this ableist?
And what did they say?
Well, it's a discussion.
I suppose that's true.
The whole like do anything not to be disabled thing is a trope in media that the disability of the community is not a big fan of.
I mean, that makes sense.
Because it pretty much means, like, I would do anything not to be like you guys. Your lives are terrible. And it's like, well, no, they can
sort of like the whole vaccines cause autism thing.
Yes.
Right? Where it's like, I'd rather my child be dead.
I'd rather. I mean, that is the subtext, isn't it?
Uh-huh. The first half. We did it.
We did the first fourth. But the rest will be a lot faster. I guess we'll just go in and I'll start with my best book for this week.
Yes, you will.
Is that good?
Uh-huh.
I am not going to lie to you. Every book that I have could have been my best book this week. Maybe with the exception of the book that I was most excited about. I mean, I didn't hate it, but I wasn't like over the moon about it. What I ended up settling on, and it's just because I love the formula so stinking much, and it nailed it. It nailed the formula. Star Trek Strange New World, The Seeds of Salvation, #1.
Star Trek.
This is by Robbie Thompson with art by Travis Mercer. I love Star Trek, and I don't get enough of it in my life. Strange New World #1 was some of the best Star Trek that's come out in a long time. So I really want to watch seasons 2 and 3. I haven't owned Paramount Plus. enough to do so. So this was really scratching an itch for me. And I was a little nervous that it wasn't going to do a great job of being Star Trek. I haven't read any of the Star Trek comics, even though I love Star Trek a great deal. But honestly, I think it really did. It maybe injected a little bit of like quippy comic book humor into it. But I liked that. It mostly follows, interestingly enough, it follows Nurse Chapel, who is a pretty minor character in Star Trek, the original series, who I knew that they were expanding her part in the first season of Star Trek Strange New World. But if this is any indication, she becomes a much bigger part of the cast even. But she is on a mission. I'm not sure why nurses are going on away missions, but I love it. The doctor goes sometimes, so maybe it's just they don't have a doctor, so they're sending the nurse. They know everything the doctor does.
Mm-hmm. They work twice as hard for half as much.
Yeah. But she is with the first officer from the show. I forget her name. But they're on a planet. They're exploring it. There's nothing exciting. So she's like, I want some excitement. And the other, the first officer girl is like, no, we should be happy that people aren't dying. Like, we shouldn't worry about excitement. We shouldn't confuse excitement with danger. And Spock keeps, like, trying to interject, like, overly complicated stuff. Like, they're like, we found that new microbe a couple of planets ago. And Spock's like, actually, it was a multicellular. And everyone's like, shut up, Spock. And finally he finishes, it was a multicellular. It was a unique microscopic multicellular fungus. she's wanting some more excitement. She calls her friend. Her friend is apparently like a gambler, but Right now, she's doing some research on this planet whose ice can stop starship sensors. She wants to know if that can be used to, like, protect planets. And she's like, you know what? That sounds like more fun. You're going to, like, explore an under ice ocean world. Like, I'm going to transfer to you guys for a little while and pilot a submarine around because I think that would be more fun. She's like, as they're dropping her off to do that, they lose contact with the base, obviously. They send engineer Lieutenant Scott, not commander, not who he'll be, Scotty. They send him, the first officer, Nurse Chapel, and Spock down. And they have really good banter back and forth. They're very much portraying Nurse Chapel as kind of headstrong, always seeking for adventure. And you've got, you know, always stoic and logical Spock. You've got this kind of over it first officer, and you've got like tech obsessed Scotty. And they have a lot of back and forth as they're exploring the place. And then they find some ice that shouldn't be there. And they kind of scan it, and they're like, well, it's kind of basically like vines, except ice. It has no more, like, structure than that, but it's kind of like living ice. So then they learn that they got a signal from under the ice, a signal that likely could only be sent by intelligent life. So in a hurry, they got into some submarines to go see it, and they haven't returned. And their scanners couldn't pick up anywhere in the base because the ice protects from scanners so perfectly, which is the whole reason they're there. So they tell the Enterprise like everything that's going on, tells them that they're going in two to see what's going on. But the Enterprise is there to back them up if they need it, unlike the original researchers who just got a signal and kind of jumped at it. So they're descending into the water where there are mysterious tentacles. I don't know if those tentacles are supposed to be like real tentacles or if they're like just like an ominous portent. But they're descending in the sub to go find the others. And it was just a delight. It's a mystery. It really had great banter between the crew. And that's what I wanted.
Nice.
So, Star Trek, Strange New World, The Seeds of Salvation gets my best book nod this week.
From the moment that I started this call, I thought what my best book was going to be, but I just changed it. Hail Mary, and a Hail Mary at the end to another book that I just think is another very strong book month over month. And that I think I've just really enjoyed a lot since it came out. I know I've talked about it a couple of times, and I'm going to talk about it again. It's Absolute Wonder Woman, number 11.
Ooh.
Look at that cover. It's very brutal. It's funny because I don't necessarily, I guess it kind of matches the tone a little bit. This is issue 4, part 4 of 5 of this arc called As My Mother's Made Me. And it's written by Kelly Thompson with Hayden Sherman on art once again. Mm-hmm. And they're just both really killing it. So Diana of the Mascara, but really of the Isle of Hell, she is currently in the Labyrinth, or she was in the Labyrinth, and she was basically just blasted with like some hallucinogenic substance and thrown in a pit. And so she's at the bottom of this pit. Yes, every day. It's basically, you feel like you're at the bottom of a pit, tripping on something.
Mm-hmm.
But she's like, there's this like fiery warrior that's down at the bottom of the pit. And Diana's like fighting them. Wonder Woman's fighting them. And then she's like, this isn't right. This doesn't feel right. I can't trust my senses. I don't want to kill someone that I don't mean to. So she does some magic and basically is like praying to Athena to help her to like see. And so she does, and she meets for the first time, possibly the second time, because I think the main antagonist that she's been up against in this arc is also an Amazon, but she meets her first Amazon, because for some reason the Amazons have been blacklisted, and Diana has been separated from them.
Well, weren't they all killed, I thought?
Apparently not. We don't know what exactly happened to them. I think it seemed that they fell out of favor in some way. Especially Zeus, because you know how he does.
For some reason, I thought Wonder Woman was the last Amazon.
As far as she knew, she wasn't even allowed to know the word Amazon growing up, so she had no idea. But she meets the Amazon, and her eyes, her like prayer to Athena and the spell has been met, and she sees like this sort of ethereal spirit thing kind of floating, and she's like, "I see you," and she doesn't know what it is. But then we get this throwback, and I can't remember who the wolf is. But there's, I think it's, I don't know who the wolf is that she's talking to, but it's like a god. Part of me wants to say Artemis, but I don't think that's right.
Romulus or Remus?
I'm really not sure.
Okay.
It's hard to know. It's a goddess, though, so it's not Romulus or Remus. But she's like little girl Diana, who's just the best, but is on the island and talking to this goddess. And she's like, "Why are you, like, you're angry with me?" And she's like, "I'm not angry with you, but everyone that I normally work with, like, there's something similar between us that draws them to me, that makes them, you know, one of my people. And that's not the case with you. There's not anything wrong with you or broken with you. That's just different from my normal people that I deal with. So it can feel that way." But the goddess has a task for Diana where she's basically summoning a Hydra so that she will go and defeat it. And she's like, "Do you have your weapon? It's important to choose. The weapon you choose is the most important thing." And so she takes her axe. She like is in this pearl, and she throws this magic pearl into the sea, grabs her axe, and goes and swims out into the sea. And then we just see, I think, her character, where she comes back, and she's like, "Here's the pearl." And then she's like, "You did great. You are a bit like me. You solved this problem." And then she picks up the pearl and is walking back to the beach. And she's like, "Where are you going?" She's like, "Oh, I made a bargain. So I let the Hydra keep my axe until I bring the pearl back." And she's like, "What do you mean?" He said, "You said to pick the right weapon. And in this case, bargain was the right weapon."
Oh, that's clever.
It was clever. And I feel like it just shows, you know, her character of just like, I'm not just going to harm someone to harm someone. But then we cut back to grown Wonder Woman. And she's meeting the, Amazon, who has like the labyrinth all tattooed on her body in order to like keep track of it all, which is pretty cool. But there's this whole society that's filled up of people in the labyrinth that have been like thrown in this pit. So Diana's talking to them because they're always trying to escape, and they're digging tunnels constantly to try to escape. And it just always meets some disaster where they can't get through. But they're like, "The currency down here is hope." And Diana's like, "Yeah, I can get with that. I think that's a good place to be." So she comes up with a plan to help them to escape. And so she's like, "I'm going to go do this. I'm going to go distract them. I'm going to free our friend Ferdinand, the Minotaur, who's being held captive by these enemies. And then when I'm doing that, you guys can escape." And we don't see what her plan is, but she has a plan. And so she goes up and basically heals Ferdinand with a magic spell, and he gets like berserk and cool and is like owning all these fishmen. And then Diana is fighting this other, I think she is an Amazon named Clea or Clea. But they're fighting, and Clea stabs Wonder Woman with her spear. It's like, oh no. And then Wonder Woman takes the spear and throws it into the pit. And the spirit that she had met earlier, she like made a contract with them, and it like comes back up, and she has like this cool, like death trident, ghost trident right there.
Love it.
Like fight this enemy. And like, that's where it ends. So we have one issue left in this story. But I just feel like Absolute Wonder Woman has made me really enjoy the character of Wonder Woman. I haven't like read a lot of Wonder Woman stuff, just like through like other like Justice League things, but never too much that's just focused on Wonder Woman specifically. But I'm really, really just liking this take on the character. Cause she's not just like girl Superman. Like, she's not just like flies around really strong. That probably isn't even necessarily how she's advertised, but like in your mind,
in your mind, yeah, especially if you don't have a lot of experience with her.
Mm-hmm. But she, yeah, but she's also not just this, like, I'm going to just go beat everybody up all the time. She's like finding other solutions to things, you know, bargaining's the right weapon. And I just think that's really cool. That's just a cool take on a character, especially a character that's like, the background was meant to like break her and like be hopeless. She's like refuses to be hopeless. And I think that's really cool.
That's one of the neater things about the Absolute Universe. When I haven't read any of the others, but when a character can like refuse to be hopeless in a world without hope, and that characteristic gets to shine through even more.
Yeah. And I think you see that with like Batman and with Superman, like all three of those in particular, and the Absolute stuff kind of play on that, or just like a tenacity. But Wonder Woman, especially, like the currency is hope, which feels important.
Yeah, definitely, especially these days.
In this day and age.
Well, why don't you do one more? Because you have six.
So I got five more. One is the same.
One is the same?
I'm assuming.
Okay, yeah, I'll just do that one, and then we can just alternate.
Okay, go for it.
Immortal Legend Batman. This is a lot of fun. I'm eager to see where it goes because it's a little basic. It is a world where we mastered dark matter to go faster than light, but in so doing, we connected to kind of like a shadow universe, and shadows come over to our universe to cause destruction. Most of them are mindless beasts, but some of them can be more than that. And so three people invented like a fighting system to fight them. The way of the Robin, which is the way of light, that's closest to the human world, the way of the Bat, which is closest to darkness, which is the shadow world, and the way of the Nightwing, which is kind of the in-between.
A shadow world.
Yeah. Stephanie Brown was not the original, but the Robin who passed to Tim Drake, which I enjoy. We don't know who was the original Nightwing, but
Harper Row.
Harper Row, the Guardian, passed it to Dick Grayson, and Bruce Wayne is Batman, of course, and he was passed the mantle by the father of Hush. But Hush wanted it and didn't get it, and now Hush's dad thinks that Batman has gone off the rails, so he's sending Hush to go kill Batman and take the power of Batman.
And that whole thing was like just the last few pages of like, here's the backstory.
Yeah, but that is like, that's going to be the main story. The story itself is like a frontier western town. Bruce Wayne and James Gordon are investigating a murder that they can't solve, but then Immortal Legend Batman shows up. Immortal Legend Batman shows up and says, like, you're not Bruce Wayne, I'm Bruce Wayne. And then it turns out he's the two-faced shadow. And Batman Kamen Rider kicks him, which I thought was a nice touch.
Bat Press.
Yeah, he called it Bat Press, but it was definitely 100%.
It was a Rider kick.
It was just a Rider kick.
Which is all it needs to be.
But as Tokusatsu fans, that was great. So not a lot. It didn't feel like this book was very consequential until it explained the premise. So it was more like a taste of what's to come, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Which I do feel like many, I'm thinking specifically like Kamen Rider. I'm specifically thinking Kamen Rider Geats. Whereas like the first issue was like, here's all the sizzle. And then we're going to get into it on the next one. It's like, we're going to get you excited. I'm thinking especially Geats, where it's like, action, action, action. They're finishing up the Desire Grand Prix of the previous year and all of that. But we're like seeing all the cool stuff. And then in the next episode is where it all starts to get unpacked.
Yeah, where the story starts.
Which is how this feels.
It's written by Kyle Higgins, who like kind of wrote the book on writing tokusatsu comics. So I definitely trust him. It's written by Kyle Higgins and Matt Groom, with art by Erica Durso and Dan Mora. I enjoyed it. I didn't love it, but I think I'm excited for what's coming.
Yeah. It was what I was going to talk about as my best book, but mostly on the strength of like those last few pages, because that got me excited.
Yeah, exactly. The last few pages is like, that's why I started with that, because like,
this is where we're going, which is what you want. So now are we just alternating?
Yep.
Okay. So next up for me is We're Taking Everyone Down With Us, number 5. I don't know why I keep holding them up to the camera, like the whole audience can see.
I show it to you every time.
Yeah, maybe it's just we both do it. We're Taking Everyone Down With Us, number 5. This is the penultimate issue of the book. This is by Matthew Rosenberg and Stefano Landini, Jason Wordy doing colors. And I still think this is a lot of fun. I think it does some really interesting things. Every issue has a moment where characters are like talking to each other, and it's just like panel. But it's always in like this very interesting way. And in this issue, we have several pages where they're having a conversation while they're playing chess. And so we just get like this as our panel.
Oh, fun.
With the pieces. And so then like, and you're like, oh, and then you turn the page and it's like more of them talking as they're playing chess, with the chess board set up, and some of the squares are just their faces, and some of the other squares are their words, and then some squares are just the pieces. But it's like, this was another like double issue, which I mean, I always appreciated double issue. But it's just kind of barreling towards the conclusion. And Tom Selleck, James Bond, is just the worst in the best way.
What do you mean?
That's kind of like the secret, the British secret agent that's going after these supervillains. He just looks like Tom Selleck. His name is Rook. And he's just a real terrible dude, but it's real fun. A little disjointed sometimes. I feel like, despite being a double issue, it's like, I feel like we needed like a page here. Like the transitions were kind of rough.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Your turn.
Oh, okay. I was like, you look like you're still like...
Sorry, I was typing in the name of the book.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
In my list.
I am doing Superman 29, Legion of Darkseid Part 2. We know where Booster Gold is.
We do. We finally learned.
Yeah, Booster Gold is in the 31st century. It looks like they're taking an interesting kind of take with this, where the Legion is changing all the time because the future is unwritten. So like whatever's going on in the present changes how the Legion is in the future. So like, In a certain way, the future of the Legion is a like a nexus point of all timelines, if that makes any sense at all. Mm-hmm. So basically, there was apparently a big war between the three or four, depending on who you ask, main legions, and Darkseid and his Legion, and Darkseid and his Legion won. And most of this book is Superboy Prime kind of telling us what's happened since he fought the Batman Who Laughs, or the Darkest Night, I guess. It kind of annoyed me because he was like, Superman kept being like, who are you talking to? And he's like, oh, just you, of course. Cause like he used to read DC comics, so he's aware he's in a comic, but I don't feel like that part of him was ever like emphasized back in the day when we read Superboy Prime stuff, but now it's like a thing where he's constantly like narrating for the audience. That was kind of
trying to Deadpool Superboy a little bit.
Trying to make Superboy Prime a little bit of a Deadpool. Superman meets up with the remnants of the Legion, and you know me, anytime there's a Legion, I'm a sucker. And it's really a good mix of the Legionnaires. He meets up with their resistance. They're going to go up against Darkseid's Legion, which is still like full and complete. There's twists and turns. Superman finds Booster Gold, and he says that he's been here since the All In ended, and it's been over 2 years. And then Superman's about to start fighting the evil Legion when he gets hit in the back with heat vision, and Superboy Prime grabs him by the neck. He's like, if you can't beat him, join him. Okay. I love this issue. Give me the Legion all the time. I feel like it's a little... it's by Josh Williamson and with art by Dan Mora. And I just feel like it's a little obvious that, like, Superboy Prime is fighting Superman to get in with the Legion so he can then turn on the Legion.
Mm-hmm.
The ending twist didn't work for me super well. But still, love this whole Legion thing going on, with multiple members of the Legion. I'm really hoping that an actual Legion book spins out of this whole thing.
That would be fun.
Cause it's great to have them back. And the costumes, the Darkseid-esque, like, cobblestone costumes look pretty cool on the Legionnaires in the two-page spread when, like, most of them are there. I thought it looked weird when it was just one of them, but when it's all of them together, it looks pretty good.
Nice. My next book, continuing in the ongoing saga that we're mostly ignoring of One World Under Doom,
yeah,
is Runaways number 3 with this fun cover where they're all on skateboards because... That's who they are. They're just a bunch of, countercultural, we're not going to follow the rules. We're going to do our own thing. Group of kids, teenagers, possibly adults at this point. I really don't know. They have a Doom bot that's with them. Doom's recalling all the Doom bots to himself, as you might remember. And so they're still on the run. One of the characters is like, we have a jailbroken Doom bot. And they want to take him and refurbish him. And then another big hook of it all is Nico Minoru has lost her magic. Like, her magic staff is gone, and so she's trying to reclaim that, like, her magic. So she's just mm-hmm. a normal person right now. So she's kind of in that, on that personal quest. Oh, Nico. But I think it's good. There's a nice drama. Again, I wish that I knew that there was Runaways between where the initial run kind of ended and now, because there was apparently a lot, as we've established before. But it's enjoyable, and I do want to read more of that. The writer is Rainbow Rowell, with art by Roberta Ingranata and Elena Casagrande. But it's fun. It's fun. It's just in the midst of this, like, One World Under Doom plot, there's just a lot of, teen angst and drama. That's always fun.
Yeah, I was like, that's
fun. It's fun in stories, not so fun in real life.
Yeah, because they say skibbity in real life.
Uh-huh. We hate that.
6-7. I have got The Mortal Thor #1. It's funny because this, in the back of this issue, they're like, let me find it real quick. You're reading The Immortal Thor #26. You're also reading Thor #787. But you're also reading The Mortal Thor #1. I don't know what leads up to this, and I'm kind of glad I don't, because it's an interesting, like, it'd be an interesting episode of television, per se. It kind of opens with a retelling of some of the history of the Marvel Universe, and I'm like, who is that guy who is kind of inspired by a Norse god who helped found the Avengers? And you would think
Thor,
but it's Beta Ray Bill. Beta Ray Bill helped found the Avengers.
Was it really?
No. But in this book, it is.
In this book, it is. That's what's important.
They're talking about, they have a god running around New York City, fighting with the Avengers. And
is it Hercules?
It's Hercules. And they make pretty clear, like, the Norse gods don't exist. And there's this guy, his name is Sigurd, and he doesn't know who he is. All he knows is that his name is Sigurd, and he is really good with a hammer. And he's just, he's a good person. His neighbor's like, hey, you have amnesia. That really sucks. I'm so sorry. He's like, it's okay. As long as I'm a good person, I'll be fine. He's like, as long as I'm helping more people than I'm hurting, like, I just know that's like what I'm supposed to do. And then there's this little kid whose name is Locke. And he's like running scams and doing funny tricks and might also be a girl.
Who could that be?
And then, so Sigurd's like, I've got to get a job. Like, my landlord is a person too. And like, they're stressing about getting my rent. And so he goes, but they're hiring strike breakers. And he gives this big speech about he is not going to feed his belly by starving someone else. So the other strike breakers, the other people who are, they're trying to hire as strike breakers, leave with him. So he sends some goons to mess him up. And Thor beats him with a hammer. Sigurd beats them with like just a normal hammer.
Wait, that's Thor?
I think so. They're constantly in this book showing him with lightning behind him. So,
man, he needs to be inside if the weather's that bad.
I know, right?
Get indoors, man.
So he beats up the three guys pretty brutally, and they're like, "Who are you to do this to us?" And he's like, "Well, like I'm beating you up, and there's lightning, and I'm protecting the weak. I guess I'm Thor." And that's where the book ends.
Guess so.
People keep talking about Thor in this book, like as a concept. And one of the bad guys has a rune tattoo that means Thor. And he's like, he's the biggest, baddest dude who throws lightning around to get what he wants. And I want to be like him. So he's like claiming that persona from that thug.
Nice.
So yeah, I don't know why Thor doesn't know who he is or why he doesn't have any powers. I'm sure the end of the Immortal Thor could tell me, but I'm kind of content not knowing.
And I bet in the next issue, it'll just be a backstory of how it all got there.
Maybe.
Hopefully not. Tease it out a little. My next book is another one. It was just a delight. It was almost my best book. Last month it was my best book. And it's Hornsby and Halo, number 9. This cover is the best.
That's a great cover. Yeah.
It's a great cover. It's like a playing card, but half of it is Hornsby, half of it's Halo, Zach and Rose. It's great. This book is by Peter J. Tomasi. Ivan Reese isn't on the art in this issue. It's someone named Ramon Box, B-A-C-H-S. So the art's a little bit different, but I mean, it still captures the feel of everything. But some of the character designs feel off. Like, I believe their name is Mirror, the angel. Uh-huh. Just looks a little bit more buff than we've seen her before, which is fine.
That's fine.
I just thought it was interesting. It's like, here, there she is. I'm just like, you have more muscles.
Yeah.
Than I remember.
Less androgynous.
Uh-huh. Which, you know, whatever. But this is just a really... another just very fun issue that's setting up some interesting things outside of just like the cosmicness of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Like this wasn't like, and now the adjudicators escaped as it seemed he was going to in the last episode, like issue. But the town is having like their town fair, and the angel and the demon that are trying to get them to like accept their heritage are trying to, like, they draw them in, they're going to blow up all the fireworks and injure a lot of people if they don't just go to their true nature or return to themselves. And so they're like met with this dilemma, and they, in a big spectacle, of course they save the day. But at the beginning of the issue and kind of throughout, these two like reality TV or maybe like internet personalities have come to town, where one, he's what's his name? He's like a monster hunter, Brick Bowden. He's Monster Hunter is the name of his show. And then another, a woman, her show is like UFOs. They're already here. But she like hunts down alien rumors and things, where they both rolled into town and they see and record this like big fireworks, thing at the end. And so it's like these human groups are noticing these things going on and are going to be, seems like they're going to be investigating kind of the weird things that are happening in this town, which is just kind of a fun wrinkle added to it. And at the very last page of the book, however, was the most exciting thing. And that was this, where it says, the blockbuster series returns, issue 7 of Rook Exodus on sale in October.
Yeah, I saw that.
So get excited for that. I'm pumped. I, for one, can't wait. And that was Hornsby and Halo number 9.
Number 9. Yeah, that's the book. That's the book that I wish I was still reading the most. And I'll probably try to grab it in trade or something, because
I think it's really in here when those are coming out. It has a trade for it and Rockefellers. Where did I see it?
So far, I have not been enticed to return to Rockefellers just yet.
Looks like they're both coming in September.
Okay.
I've enjoyed Rockefellers.
I really want to read, I just need to get the trades for them and go. I really want to read Guy Green Redcoat. I think I would love them. But we are where we are.
Mm-hmm.
My last book, you have one more?
Uh-huh.
Is the final issue, I think, of Dune. This one is Edge of the Chris Knife. This is a follow-up to that other one-shot. I don't know why they're Among both... The Harkonnens. What?
Among the Harkonnens.
Among the Harkonnens. I don't know why they're both issue number ones, because it's a clear, like, that story led directly into this.
Mm-hmm.
It's the story of Mapes and how... it's really just a story about how the Fremen Rebellion is so tragic, because they keep trying to get people off their planet who are brutally oppressing them, and they keep winning, but then it's just they're replaced by worse people. So we just can kind of continue the story of Mapes here, as she and her son, the guy in the last one, got her pregnant right before he died. How they go on a mission to really hurt the Harkonnens on Arrakis, and they succeed, but in so doing, her son dies, all of the Fremens in that band die, and it really just hurts her heart, and they're like, but maybe this time they'll finally start listening to us. But instead, we get the introduction at the end of this book of Vladimir, Baron Vladimir Harkonnen, which, if you are a Dune fan, you'll know is like the main bad guy, who really kind of ruled with an iron fist. So like they kind of accidentally brought in the worst of the worst, that really subjugated them. It's kind of this just tragic tale about these freedom fighters who are just fighting something so much bigger than they can. And they're constantly having bad consequences for it.
That's what happens sometimes.
But the art is gorgeous. The storytelling is really good. It's a great book.
Cool, cool. And my last book is Ultimate Spider-Man number 20. Fun cover here.
That is a fun cover.
If you didn't know, this just gave it all away. Gwen Stacy is Mysterio. Actually, she's a Mysterio. There's 5 people that are Mysterio. And she is one of them.
Gwen Stacy book.
We did both have very different Gwen Stacy.
Very different.
It was good. I mean, I feel like we're nearly to the end of, I feel like, of the Ultimate Universe, kind of the way it's been set up, where it's like 2 years where the Maker is sealed away. But then something's going to happen with that. And then, so it's been like a month. Every issue of Ultimate Spider-Man's been like 1 month later, 1 month later. And so most of this issue was just like 2 conversations. Like, it was good, but it wasn't like Spider-Man.
Okay.
But it was, you know, sort of the drama of it all with Harry and Gwen and Peter, like, coming clean with Mary Jane of, like, here's everything. Everything that you have not known is happening. Here's everything that's happening. And then a little bit of Richard talking to Ben Parker.
Okay.
Because his life is complicated. And he's grounded from the Spider-Man suit.
The, like, venomy one?
Uh-huh. Because he went and got himself captured by Kingpin.
Mm-hmm. All right. I guess those are that's our books and book, best books and book blurbs. What have you been reading lately? Let us know. Send us a message at hotcomicpulls@gmail.com or find us on Blue Sky
Yep, at comicspalooza.bsky.social. Mm-hmm. I'm looking right now to see if there's anything there. There's not. Oh, too bad it's Gotchard, though. What? I pulled it up and just saw this that you can buy. It's the Gotchard gun and the Gotchard driver. $39.20 on Amazon.
That's not so bad.
I wish it didn't look like a big tackle box.
All right. Yeah, most people are comparing it to a Nintendo Switch.
That's fair.
Okay. I guess this will be where our joke break is.
Mm-hmm. There it was. There was our joke break.
We love those products.
Yes. Jokes. Now it's time for everyone's favorite part of the show. The real reason you listen, I think. Mm-hmm. And that is Uncle's One More Thing.
Except this time it's Two More Things.
Two More Things. So I'll go first because you went first in the show. I haven't finished anything in a long time, but I'm going to talk about two things that I'm almost done with. But that by the time next week rolls around, I will be done with and will have moved on to other things. Possibly. Okay. So the first is a video game. I know Chance has played a good chunk of it too. It's called Trails Through Daybreak. I am nearly done with it. I'm at like the final dungeon, which if you've played a lot of Trails games, you know that the final dungeon is usually really big. Trails Zero from Zero, Trails to Azure. It's mm-hmm. to Azure. I can never remember the prepositions. Yeah, the Trails to, from you're going from Zero to Azure. Mm-hmm. The final dungeon in that game is so freaking long. Trails of Cold Steel 2, the final dungeon in that game, is absolutely ridiculously long. I believe Cold Steel 3 and 4 both had massive dungeons, like final dungeons. And even Trails into Reverie, like it just had basically a whole like super dungeon sub-story. Because it's all about that. So I don't know what I'm really getting into saying, hey, I've got the final dungeon left. Like it could be really long, mm-hmm. But it probably isn't. But I think it is a fantastic game. If you've not played any games in the Legend of Heroes Trails series, I really got it right. We've talked about it on this show before. I highly recommend it. If you like JRPGs, if you like storytelling, just massive like interwoven stories, this is the series for you. If you want to start at the beginning, because this is like game 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 9, 10, game 11. I think there's 12 currently out. They're about to release like a remake of the first game, Trails in the Sky, first chapter that comes out. The demo's out. You can get the demo on anything now. It's on Switch now too. I have it, but I'm waiting to finish Daybreak before I dive in. But you can test that out because it's just kind of the start of everything. I started in Cold Steel, which is, you know, five games deep, but each at the start of each arc. There's a lot of gatekeepers out there that will tell you, like, you got to start at the first, which will be easier than ever here in a couple weeks. But if you start at, like, the beginning of an arc, that's a great time to start. And Cold Steel 1 is 3 or 4 years later since I first played it. It's still one of my favorite games of all time.
Of Steel? Steel in?
Cold Steel 1, yeah.
Yeah, Zero is my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Zero is really good, too. And Cold Steel 1 is a lot longer. I think that's what Zero has in its advantage, is it's not, you know, an 80-90 hour game. It's like a 40 hour game, but it's a really good 40. Maybe it's 60. 40 to 60.
I was going to say, because I played 60 to 70, but also my version of it was very glitched when I played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I played it when they released them officially. But it's just like massive overarching story. I think the way Daybreak, since that's the one I'm talking about specifically, sets up the way you build the cast of characters, it's just very different from what you have in Zero or in Cold Steel. Because like in Zero, you're like a police officer and you have like your squad and like that's your party. It's like from the very beginning, these are the people that are assigned to your party and you're just doing everything together. Cold Steel, you're a class, like in a literal school, you're a class. And so like that's obviously the people that you're doing things with. But in Daybreak, you're like a loner fixer. You're like a problem solver that kind of walks the line between good and bad.
You don't.
You don't. I mean, you can, but it's actually really difficult to make the bad choices. You're still like a nice guy, but you'll do what needs doing, essentially. Yeah. It's kind of the way that it is. And that feels accurate.
Things that the cops and the heroic bracers maybe it's a little too complicated for them.
Mm-hmm. But you're going around, and as you're going through the world, you go to like different towns and kind of solve a mystery or work a case there, and you pick up a lot of little side quests as you're in those places, but you like pick up another character that joins the party long term while you're in that place. And so rather than having everybody at once, you're like kind of picking up strays, as it were, as you kind of go through, and it's kind of you're building the community rather than having it handed to you. But I just think overall it's a really great story that's being told. Chapter 5 in particular is probably my favorite single chapter of any Trails game that I've played.
Really? I played
like 7 others. Yeah, because you were at the end of chapter 4, and then there's an intermission, which is also really good. Okay. And then chapter 5 is just like really, really cool and interesting. It was just a lot of fun. And now I'm in the finale, and it's also, I just feel like that's a Trails signature of like, you get to the end and you're like, hey, everything's really cool and awesome. And then the other shoe drops and it's like, oh, everything actually sucks. But in like the best way.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of where I am. I'm in the everything sucks part. I find it to be a lot of fun, and I'm excited to play the second one.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still trying to debate how I want to play through Trails right now. With Sky coming out, I feel like that's the best place to start, but that still leaves Sky first and second chapter, or second and third chapters, not mm-hmm. accounted for. So it does seem like
Falcom's committed to doing this.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, if they announce like second chapter's coming out next year,
mm-hmm.
then like, yeah, okay, I'll play Sky this year, that next year, and then just go through the back catalog until I finish. And play through them all in order. If not, I'm just going to have some thinking to do. I want to finish Daybreak 1, 2, and 3.
Well, it's only Daybreak 1 and 2, and then there's Trails
Beyond the Horizon.
Beyond the Horizon, Farewell of Zemuria.
It's Daybreak 3.
Sort of, but it's also like bringing in a lot of other things, too.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of what Reverie was to Cold Steel.
Yeah, which is interesting, because Reverie was like the wrap-up to the Crossbell games and the Cold Steel game.
Yeah.
And then this is like, there's only been 2 games in the Reverie world, and we're doing a big wrap up. But it feels like a big wrap up to all 13 games.
Yeah.
In a way.
And then there's one more arc, and then that's the end of Trails, right?
Yeah. It's the worst. So yeah. But I'm excited for all of it. Jason Schreier recently did an interview, I don't know if you saw, with like the president of Falcom.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Because it's, like, very interesting, because he was, like, a gamer. I mean, this was, like, back in the 80s and 90s. But he was, like, a gamer who became the CEO of this company because he was just passionate about it. And mm-hmm. it's, like, they're a very small team, but they just do the things that they want to do. And their mm-hmm. shareholders like that. They're like, we could make a game that's this, but this is what we know and what we're good at. So we're just going to do it. And it's, like, we're going to remake the first Trails game, because why not?
Well, because there's not a good way to play it.
There's really not. And it's like, it just, why not? It's a big storied franchise. We want to make sure that people have the place to start. And so they just did it. And it's not like the bottom line. Like, mm-hmm. I think the whole Trails series, there's like 12 games out right now. And it's sold like 8 million copies between all 12 million or 12 games. So it's not like ridiculous sales, but it's like, they're like, this is really good and we're proud of that. And that's like, great, that's what you want.
Well, and it's acclaimed, and they own all the merchandise rights, and like people who love Trails love Trails, so
mm-hmm. yes, we do.
Yeah, if there was more Trails merch available in America, I would have bought it,
all of it.
Especially if there was a Randy Orlando shirt.
Yeah.
Good old, I saw him Beyond Horizon in the Beyond Horizon trailer.
As he should be.
But I'm excited. It's my, even though I've really only beaten 2 games in it, it's still my favorite video game series of all time.
I found a Randy Orlando shirt on TeePublic.
Yeah, but that's like just random low quality shirts people made, right? Like Redbubble.
I don't know about if TeePublic is that way. Probably. Redbubble. No, thank you.
Anyway, my one more thing. Well, my first one more thing. Which one do I do first? I've been reading a manga lately.
Wow.
A lot of people are saying this is going to be like the next big anime. And I just kind of wanted to check it out. I've never like read a manga and then watched to see how the anime adapts it. But it's called Kagurabachi.
Kagurabachi.
Yeah, Kagurabachi, all one word, which I guess kind of just is a way of saying karma. So I sing the karma song a lot as I read it. But it's kind of a way of saying like what goes around comes around. It's kind of like bachi is almost like a kagura is a dance or a performance, and bachi is like divine. So it's like kind of a what goes around comes around kind of deal. I went on this big thing about trying to figure out what it meant. But it's a really cool manga series that I highly recommend to everybody. Or like I said, there's going to be a pretty high production anime coming out about it soon. But it's like it's modern day, but sorcerers exist, and the sorcerers all have like different magic. But when sorcerers like came out of the woodworks, there was a big war that was like devastating. And one guy forged 7 katana that were so powerful, the 7 katana ended the war. The guy who forged them was a firm believer that whenever a swordsmith's weapon is used, he's responsible for what it's used for. So he like recollected the swords and hid them away to make sure that no one misused them. But then a like sorcerer yakuza found him, killed him, and stole the swords without them knowing that he created a 7th or an 8th sword. No, I think they stole 6 and he had created a 7th. He created a 7th sword, and now his son wields it and is like hunting down the people who killed his dad and trying to recollect the swords so that evil people won't use them for evil deeds and sully his dad's name.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really cool. The battles are really neat. The swords, when they're in use, manifest as like physical, like it kind of like summons, I guess. And the main kid, his dad was a goofball. He's probably like 17 in the series, but his dad was a goofball who like randomly bought fish. He's like, fish are lucky. I got a black gold fish to absorb all the bad luck. I've got a gold fish to give bad luck. And I've got a 3 painted one just because I thought he looked cool. He's like, yes, but what are we going to do with 3 gold fish? And his dad was like, I don't know. So like the kid ended up feeding them and taking care of them. And then the final sword he made had like it personifies its energy as like 3 gold fish. A black one, a gold one, and a 3 color one. And like each of them has like a different ability. I don't know. It's a really cool kind of power system. It's brutal, like super brutal. But also like, I don't know. It's very like shonen tropey in just like, my dad wanted only good things to come from weapons of death, and I will make sure that happens. So I really like the world. I really like the style. I really like the power system. So I've become quite fond of, I've read 3 volumes of Kagurabachi.
Nice. All right. My actual one more thing is also a book. It's a book I'm not quite done yet. I'm under 100 pages left, but I've really been enjoying it. I believe it came out last year, maybe 2023, but it's called Babel, or perhaps Babel, depending on how you pronounce it, by R.F. Kuang. And it's sort of an alternate fantasy history of Oxford in the early 1800s, early to mid 1800s. And it's through the eyes of this boy who is from Canton, China. But he is taken and sort of adopted by this Englishman and taught Latin and Greek. And he was already being taught English, but English as well. And he's enrolled as a translator at the Oxford Institute of Translation. And essentially in this world, there is magic through language translation, particularly through silver, and sort of the meaning that is lost in translation between words is able to be manifest in these ways through these match pairs that these translators discover. Just through like tinkering around with language. But really it's a book that very, very quickly you know that it's not like this magical, wonderful fantasy view of the world, but it's about empire and the way empire absorbs and subjugates people to benefit itself. In the way that it chews people up and spits people out, particularly people who are not like those in power. And even though it is a magical world, the parallels to the actual world are all there as well. And like, that's just the way empire works. That's the way colonialism works. It seeks to enrich itself at the detriment of its colonies, at the detriment of the people that it is subjugating. A lot of the book is really about like language and translation, and it's like very interesting. I feel very smart when I read it because I like understand some of it. But then I feel like I'm like learning things. And then at a point about halfway, 60% through, it just all like falls apart and blows up in a very literal way. That's very interesting. It sort of like moves along this different track that's just very engaging and still has a lot of very interesting and good things to say about all the things that I already said.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, have a whole lot more to say about it, but I would recommend it, obviously, because I'm here talking about it. I want to read other books by this author. I feel like she's written, I think, 6 books now. She just had one come out. It's very interesting, but they're all very different.
She wrote The Poppy War, right?
Uh-huh.
So I constantly hear nothing but praise for it. So.
Yeah, so that was a trilogy that she wrote. Then she wrote this. She most recently, until like last week, wrote a book called Yellow Face, which is like a modern day, about like author drama. And then she just released a book, I believe it's called Katabasis, which is the Greek term for like the hero's descent into the underworld. And it's like about academia and magic and going to hell.
Yeah.
On purpose.
Yeah. I'm familiar with her stuff a little bit. And Yellowface is more of almost like an autobiography for her, right?
I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. I think it is, but...
Well, in it, the Asian person dies and the white woman takes her work and passes it off as her own,
mm-hmm,
while pretending to be Asian. So I don't think that that's autobiographical for the author, but I'm sure it has some things to say of being a Chinese person in a particularly white-dominated...
Yeah, maybe autobiography wasn't correct. Maybe cultural commentary.
Perhaps more of that.
Is more what I meant, but it doesn't really matter. Yeah, she's apparently amazing. I have the entire Poppy War. I got it on sale once. It was like one of those, like, get the whole trilogy for $3.
Mm-hmm. Love those.
But I've never busted into it yet.
Last year I got like 12 Discworld books for like $1 each.
Mm-hmm. I think I did that too. Maybe you're the one who told me about it.
It's possible.
But yeah, so R.F. Kuang, great. For me, my final one more thing, and the final thing we'll talk about, I was finally, I've been trying to for so very long, I have recently finally been able to get my child into an anime.
You did it.
Yeah. I kind of struggle because my son and I are very different people. Which isn't like a bad thing by any stretch of the imagination, but we just are very different people. And I can struggle to relate to him more than I would like to. Maybe that's a little too deep for the podcast, but here we are. But one thing that we can both kind of relate to is like our love of like imaginative things and stuff like that. So finally I started thinking like maybe like one of the things that we could relate to because he loves collecting. And I don't necessarily love the collecting aspect of card games, but I love like card games. I love like deck building and making things. So I showed him an episode of the 2018 series Cardfight Vanguard, and he loved it. He was so into it. And when I told him that maybe we could go get some cards, he like flipped out. And he was so happy. So it was a good moment. And I've kind of been exploring the card game a little bit. And it's really kind of cool. We bought a couple starter decks and we've played a few times. So I don't know a ton about it. But the art on the cards is like, they're all full art cards, which I think is just so much better than the way Pokemon and Magic do their card art.
Mm-hmm. Now they can really get you for those full art cards.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Give me that.
Well, and even this game has a ton of different like rarities, but it's all like holos or like alt arts. But I think it's a really neat show. It's a really neat way for us to get involved. But I'll tell you a story I've already told Cameron. I did kind of make a mistake a little bit in that I got my son into this thing that no one's ever heard of, like no one.
Yeah, I never heard of it until Chance told me this.
What? You cut out there for a bit.
I said, I never heard of it until you told me this story.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I got my child into this thing that's never heard of, and we bought a bunch of packs, and we opened them, and even though it is the... We bought a bunch of the most recent packs, which is, like, reprints of older cards that aren't really, like, all that findable anymore. He opens a pack and finds a very, very rare copy of the main protagonist's main card from the show we're watching from 2018. It's the equivalent of like opening a pack and finding like a Dark Magician after you've just seen the first 10 episodes of Yu-Gi-Oh! So he's super excited and he just can't believe he got this card. I can't really believe he got it either because I didn't know it was even in there. I figured there was no way to pull that card because it was so old. But he got a reprinting of it and he was so excited. And I looked it up and it was like worth like 48 bucks or something like that. So I was like, man, I can't believe he got something like that rare. And he's like, I'm going to show all my friends. And I'm like, oh, none of your friends are going to have just any clue what you're talking about. So I was telling Cameron, I basically had to like turn my child into a hipster and be like, this is a cool thing that only you know about. Like, they're not quite cool enough to really know about it. So like, if they're not as excited as you are, that's why. Because he was so excited for other people to be excited that he got this. And I was just like, ooh.
It's really very cute.
I'm not very far into the anime, and I haven't played the card game a lot, but I'm having just a lot of fun exploring it, you know? Just enjoying... a lot of the art on the cards is really cool. It's a pretty cheap game to buy packs for. I am told like actual competitive deck building can get pretty expensive, but that's not really what I'm doing. I'm just playing with my son. A new set, like a brand new set, just released today or yesterday. So it is like still ongoing.
That's always fun.
Yeah. So there's going to be product for he and I to kind of explore together, which I'm excited about. So yeah, Cardfight Vanguard is my last one more thing.
Woohoo! And we've done it.
We did it.
We came back.
They thought
they counted us out.
We came, we saw.
We conquered.
We survived. About it.
We survived. I'm a survivor, just like Beyonce.
Just like Beyonce. When I think of Cameron, I also think of Beyonce.
I am Beyonce. Always. All right. Well, we've already plugged the socials and the ways you can get in touch with us. So be sure to reach out because we know you always do. But yeah, I think that that's it. I think that's all that we have. So barring any personal disasters, we will be returning next week at the same turtle time and the same bat channel.